I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London today. But Jules, so much going on because we have games in La Liga, in Serie A, in the Bundesliga, something called the League Cup in England. But we're going to start with a story which I think goes beyond what happens on the pitch. It's the fact David Ornstein in The Athletic reporting on Monday that Liverpool Football Club, they're circulating decks among investors. They've engaged Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, I believe, ostensibly to sell the club. Now, Liverpool came back and said, well, we're all, we receive expressions of interest. We're looking for investors, blah, blah, blah. But this is pretty huge, and which is why we're talking about this and not the fact that Liverpool's C team went out and needed penalties to beat Derby County.
Yeah, true. They needed penalties to start with the game, the football. Quavin Kelleher in goal, again, amazing in the penalty shootout. He's won four now, four penalty shootout in, what, 18 games, I think?
That's an amazing stat.
It's an amazing ratio, the best ever in Liverpool history as a goalkeeper. All of that, that was great. The kids got to play. We saw a few talented ones. And in the end, they qualified. This is most important. Now, the sale. Because is it for you a sale? Is it for you new investors selling a few shares of the club? Is it a bit of both? Is it what FSG as Fenway Group are saying, like, well, let's see what's coming our way now. We're testing the water, as the English like to say.
So there's a couple things, I think, going on here. First and foremost, all those long lists of like, oh, potential investors, people actually put out odds. Is it Stephen Pagliuca? Is it the Saudi media group? Is it Jim Ratcliffe? Ignore all that because I don't think we're anywhere near that stage. I think one of the single most important things to consider, which I think is actually kind of underreported right now, is that right now there is that Super League case in front of the European Court of Justice. We expect a preliminary verdict in just before the World Cup final, towards the end of December, and then we expect a definitive verdict in the weeks or months following that. Now, obviously, if the verdict goes the Super League's way, the Super League case brought by Real Madrid, Juventus, and Barcelona, the value of Liverpool goes up tremendously. You know, it may not be $3 billion or whatever number they chuck around. It could be $10 billion instantaneously because that is a complete game changer. So whereas if they lose, the value of Liverpool doesn't really change because we kind of have the status quo. So if I'm selling you this pen, Jules, and I know that there is a chance that in 2 months this pen will be worth 10 times or 5 times what it's worth now, I'm not going to sell it to you. I'm not sell it to you quickly, right?
Exactly.
I think that's one big factor to consider. I do not expect anything happening quickly. I think the other big question is the fact that this came out so publicly, because you know, when we saw Chelsea, they ended up, they denied and denied it. Now we know that they were up for sale like 3 years before. Not up for sale, they were willing to entertain offers, which is, let's face it, this is where Liverpool are now. And yet they weren't actually circulating decks. Now people say, well, people who don't know, an investment deck is basically, it's like a business plan, it's like a proposal of
with figures,
projections and so on, how they calculate their value, whatever. To print physical copies, and again, and Ornstein got his hands on one of these, and you know, it means that they're not exactly moving very secretly about this.
No, they wanted this to be known, clearly.
They definitely, I think, wanted this to be known.
They've been there 12 years. You can understand why, whether it's a full sale or just investment and part ownership, whatever. You can understand why they're seeking this for the good of Liverpool Football Club.
And, well, for the
For their good as well.
Or for their own good, right?
You know,
their
money. Now the club needs an investment, needs more money to be able to compete with.
Well, and I think that in some ways is the elephant in the room, right? Obviously, these are very, very wealthy men. They look at the landscape around Europe. They look at how much faith do we have in cost controls and the ability of the game to regulate itself. Not from a competitive balance standpoint. It's not about keeping the cartel. It's about keeping costs low so that people who are investors can actually make money off it. Because, look, I don't think I'm revealing a secret. Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City, Saudi, we don't know yet. Whatever they say now about being profitable with investments, you know, but over the years, they have obviously put in a lot of money, which in terms of bottom line return, bottom line dollar return, they did not get back. So they lost money for many years, right?
They will never get back unless they sell.
Yeah, and they can say we got them back in terms of image, soft power, whatever. I don't want to get into that argument, right? But the point is, Henry and Warner, people at FSG, they're not interested in soft power. They're interested in delivering some kind of return.
Of course.
So the question is, are they low? Are they not where they want to be? Obviously, we've gone into a recession.
Yeah.
Is this why they're doing it?
Maybe. They bought the club for, what, 400 million? Was it 12 years ago? If they sell it for 3 billion now, I mean, that's an incredible profit. And those people are finance people. This is what they do. They investment people.
All right, Jules, I want to explain. I think most of our listeners know, but just for the avoidance of doubt, to make this very, very clear, when we say, oh, they're the richest club in the world, they have this much money and blah, 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 that's not really how clubs work. So clubs operate as businesses.
Yeah.
Some clubs, if they make losses, they have owners who go and make up those losses by putting in money.
Yeah.
Or they'll invest in the club. They'll be an interest-free loan, or they'll raise the equity so that the club have physical cash.
That's their own money. That'll
be the owner's.
Yeah.
That'll be the owner's money. And it can be an ownership group. It can be a corporation. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't necessarily need to be like an individual, right? FSG is, obviously, they have different interests in the Boston Red Sox and whatnot. They have investors who seek a return. Now, the majority of FSG shares are held, I think I'm right in saying, by John W. Henry and Warner.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's a listed company in the stock exchange where they have thousands of investors and they have to pay a dividend, otherwise the stock price goes down or whatever, right? So they can take a hit for a while longer. They can make decisions that other companies might not make. But ultimately, they need cash to run. And I think and the issue of having cash on hand as opposed to just a positive balance sheet, I think those are two different things. Those are really, really important.
Yeah.
So one way that people have looked at this is the game is just getting too expensive. We cannot compete with Manchester United and Real Madrid have a structural advantage. It's not that, I don't want to get into like they're a bigger club or whatever, but objectively, they are bigger brand, and Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Those are bigger brands who have exploited their brand, who have grown their brand for a long time,
exactly.
As opposed to, I think it also matters where these people are. And I'm saying this in the nicest possible way, but, Liverpool is not a wealthy city. No. Relative to Munich, say. It's not as big as these other cities, like Munich or like Madrid. I mean, Munich is, it's the richest city and the richest part of the richest economy or the biggest economy in Europe, right?
Yeah.
Germany.
Yeah.
So there's all these structural advantages. Yeah. So it's like, it's tough to compete with those guys. It's tough to compete with Paris Saint-Germain and City, who, have this availability of cash.
Yeah.
At some point, we don't want Liverpool's value to go down if we can't keep putting in money, right?
Yeah, and the value will go down if the team is not doing as well as they have been doing for the last 7-8 years, really. And the problem that is you fall behind in terms of how much money you can invest in your team to buy players, then you will start dropping. And
it's I think Arsenal is perhaps an example of that. People used to make fun of Wenger when he talked about the top four trophy or whatever. But the reality, Arsenal had, 3 years, 4 years outside the Champions League? They're still not in the Champions League now. So that means that those 4 years, if you're not playing Champions League, you're getting, depending what your revenue is, you're getting sort of 15-20% less each year.
Exactly.
And so that means you either spend less, it means your owner has to put in money in terms of equity, or it means that you have to take on debt.
Yeah, or sell some of your best players that you would not want to sell.
Or you have to sell some of your best players, yeah. So you don't want to get into that situation.
No. And I think FSG have done a lot of good things with that club. They've made mistakes, of course, and remember during the pandemic, some of the decisions maybe, but the training ground, the stadium, Klopp, of course, but even the team that won the Champions League and won the league for the first time in 30 years, they did good things. I think right now it feels like whether they sell the whole club or just have new investors, it feels like they need a bit of fresh blood coming in as well. Maybe to refreshing after 12 years is a long time to own a football club, to try to keep it at the top, be consistently successful, and it's a long time. If you have new people coming in with maybe different ideas, money to invest in, because let's not forget as well that they built this incredibly successful team also on the back of the sale from Coutinho and the sale from Suarez.
Yeah.
if you don't sell those two players at that time, I'm not sure how you build this squad that then won you all those things. And now you don't have those assets anymore really in your team.
Yeah, and you can't go and sell players at crazy inflated prices to Barcelona exactly, the way you did in the past. Yeah. Yeah, and I also want to point something else out that, you know, broadly speaking, football clubs make money in three different ways. They make money through stadium income. So in other words, by selling out the stadium, having luxury boxes, whatever. They make money through commercial income and sponsorships. And they make money from prize money, from what they get from their performances in the league and in the Champions League. Now, so in terms of commercial income and sponsorship, Liverpool have generated a lot of money around the world, of course, but you know they're not where Real Madrid or Bayern are, Manchester United are. But equally, there's a worldwide recession right now, right?
Yeah.
Times are tough, so it's not you're not going to run into that many companies who are like, oh yeah, sure, I'll cut you, you know, a 20 million check so you can put my logo here, right? It's just it's a lot tougher to do, which is also why we're seeing a lot of slightly weirdo sponsors, you know, we've talked about that with Fulham, with Man City, we've gotten ripped off. So
TV right money, you might expect now, will stagnate.
So the prize money is linked to the TV rights money. Exactly. So the couple of things. So when the TV rights go up as a whole, that's obviously good for your club. But when they go up for a whole, like, you have to see how they go up for everybody in your league, right? And everybody in the Champions League. So that doesn't really move the needle. The question is, how much can you keep out-earning your rivals by finishing higher than in the league and so on, and going further in the Champions League? Now, they've done a great job of that. It's certainly not guaranteed.
No. Nope.
To do that, you need to have a good team on the pitch. It's really hard to keep that level. The other aspect, though, I think, is also stadium income. And here I go back to Liverpool's geography, right? This is not one of the wealthier parts of England. They have 30 miles away, or 35 miles away, they have Manchester United, who, you know, remain a behemoth of a brand with tons of fans. They have Manchester City, who've been phenomenally successful on their own doorstep. Okay, they have Everton, who
They're building a new stadium.
Who are building a new stadium. It's tough timing. Everton have a big fan base. For all this idea that, oh, we have 700 million fans around the world, the fans who bring you the most money are the ones who show up to the game, who, because they buy the tickets, the merchandise, the concessions. There's only so much you can squeeze your local fan base, right? You can't build a 250,000 seat stadium, although Florentino Perez might try to do that one day. So, you know, there's a whole business model piece to this that I think people need to understand. Jurgen Klopp, though, was very categorical about this. He came out and he said, whatever happens, I'm staying.
Yeah, pretty whatever much, happened, right? He said, like, he's committed to the club, regardless of ownership. He said also that when he extended his deal not that long ago, it was on the belief that, you know, it was the partnership with FFG as well and the owners of the club. That's why I think he believes more right now that they're just looking for investors. I think he may even say, like, the club is not for sale per se, as in the whole, you know, the whole club. We'll have to see. I don't know exactly what he knows or what they've told him or not, because as like you rightly said, I think the door is open to anything, really. But it's a good thing at least to have a manager who's like, yeah, this is not really bothering me. This is not a negative pressure or negative influence or negative noise, because we know where we are, we know what we're doing, and we're going to keep doing what we've been doing.
Now, one of the other things which I think is significant here in terms of how they went about doing it, I mean, you said before, and I tend to agree, right? If you produce an investment deck, you've got an actual physical something that you can't deny, right? The fact that they wanted it out, I think, is relevant, because if there's one thing that I've kind of learned covering this business and sometimes the business of football, is that there aren't that many billionaire private equity groups out there. And to some degree, they kind of all know each other.
Yeah.
So if they wanted to do this quietly, the way, for example, they did it quietly when they sold, I think it's 11% of Fenway Sports Group, they sold it to Redbird. As far as I know, they didn't engage an investment bank to find Redbird. They didn't, you know, they knew the guys. Yeah. They called up, hey, Jerry, you know, you want to talk? Can we do business? Whatever. And they did the deal. Now, I'm purely speculating here. People are like, you shouldn't speculate. Well, nah, this is kind of part of the thing, because there's only so much we know. I would get the impression that they have perhaps gone to the people that they know and the sources that they know. And it's a lot of people in the U.S.
It would make sense.
And they've gone to them quietly. They weren't able, at this moment in time, because we're not in a good place. The world is not in a good place financially. And so they said, all right, Goldman, Martin Stanley, you guys go out there and find us other someone. People. There's people in other parts of the world. But here's my...
Does that worry you?
I mean...
Does that mean that maybe Liverpool is not as attractive as they thought it might be? Or maybe because of the recession and the context economically, it's not maybe the right time to
It's tough to say. Open? Look, it could also be something else. It could also be, okay, you know, John and Tom sit there and say, all right, we're probably going to have to inject another $50 million in cash each this year. Oh, wait. What if we could sell X percent of the club to somebody else to do that for us? Mm. Oh, yeah, good idea. Why don't we try it? Worst thing comes to worst, we'll just reach in our own pockets and put that in, right? So I think that's part of the piece as well, right? It doesn't mean the sky is falling. It doesn't mean that John W. Henry's living, you know, under the T bridge in Boston. But it is relevant. We saw that with Redbird as well. Redbird owned 11% of Fenway Sports Group. Obviously, they bought Milan for $1.2 billion. I think it's been reported and I confirmed it that you know they didn't actually give $1.2 billion. They gave
half of it.
It's more than half, but they gave but a portion of it. They borrowed. It's called a vendor loan, and it's not unusual. It's what happened with Newcastle as well with Amanda Stavelisher. They borrowed it effectively from the person, from the people who are selling them the club, and they'll kind of pay it back over time. It's kind of like when you buy a car, you've got car payments to make, right? So I said, but it's not because it's a bad investment. It's because this is the landscape right now for these people. So I wouldn't worry about it too much if I'm a Liverpool fan.
Yep.
I think the imperative for them is we want Liverpool to maintain their value. And we need to put money into it. Because if Liverpool become what Arsenal were in that kind of fallow period where they're not making top four, they're not as relevant as they were, then the value of Liverpool as a whole drops, right? Mm. I wonder too, though, Jules, they have made a commitment, John W. Henry, after the Super League fiasco. He apologized. He made that video. He made a commitment. Super League is not an option for us.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned the mistakes that they made at some point. That was one of them. The furlough scheme was another one. They've rectified them as well as they could.
But I'm thinking specifically of the Super League, because if you say we're not joining the Super League, you know, as long as I'm here, you're making a commitment perhaps even on behalf of the club.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, another owner could come in and be
of course.
I don't care what John Henry said. You know,
I'm the boss now.
I'm the boss now. Here we go. You know.
It's just the relationship with Liverpool fans is obviously very strong, as in the club to the fans and the fans to the club. We saw the backlash that those decisions created back then.
Under the previous owners, well, also before, with Hicks and Gillette.
That was very toxic. So, I think you're accountable, is that what we say? To your fans in what you've said before and now what you can do as well. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens in the Super League cases, of course, as you mentioned earlier, and then take it from there. But you can't, you know, you can't not expect maybe a new owner coming and having different views on the Super League.
Yeah, and I don't think you can rule that out. I mean, we saw definitely it with Tomboli as well, where he said, well, we don't need the Super League now, when he took over Chelsea, when he gave that interview. But I'm not putting anything off the table. It would be stupid to do that, right? From his perspective, fine. So I would tend to agree with you. If I'm a Liverpool fan, you sit tight, you wait. You need to lose this idea that, oh, we need to be bought by some billionaire from the Gulf to chuck money in. I don't think that business model is sustainable. I don't think that business model is desirable. Before City and Paris Saint-Germain fans jump all over me, I'm talking a business model where you lose money every year, which is why both City and Paris Saint-Germain, you know, they would say, and I think they are trying to move towards some level of break even or profitability. I think that's the reality of where we are. It's definitely, I think, a situation to keep an eye on. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Liverpool. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Barcelona do it the hard way on the road to Osasuna. They go a goal down early. They play with more than an hour with 10 men after Robert Lewandowski's red card. But still, they win 2-1. Jules, victories like these matter emotionally, right?
You're right, Gab. They matter a lot in terms of points to start with because you stay at the top and you open a 5-point gap with Real Madrid, of course, before they play on Thursday night. Emotionally, you're right, to get this team even more together, to believe even more.
You saw the narrative, we've got grit, we've got bounce back
ability. It was, because to be fair, Osasuna played so well, don't deserve to lose that game, maybe not even to draw it. Barca struggled, some changes, some players missing, of course, the red card by Lewandowski, but yet to come back from 1-0 down at 10 against 11 and to score first Pedri and then a lovely Rafinha goal from De Jong assist.
A header, it's no great. Less.
Yeah, header.
It's really, on Lewandowski's really red card, so when I first saw it, I said, what? And then I watched the replay and I said, and I have to assume that Robert Lewandowski, after 500 games or however many as a professional.
He's only his second red card in his career.
That's fine, but he knows exactly.
I think so.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
David Garcia, I think it was. He's on the yellow already. If you're not on the yellow and you want to, like, you know, go a bit tough, maybe. Although I think that was a straight red, which I think a second yellow was fair. But why?
Yeah.
Why are you doing that? Like, I really didn't get it.
It's an odd one. And by the way, conspiracy theorists, it's not because he wants some rest before the World Cup.
Definitely not. Definitely not. And Gerard Piqué said he was quitting at the weekend, of course, but stuck around to make up the numbers on the bench for that game against Osasuna. A guy that got sent off without coming on.
Sent off in your last ever game. Wow. I wonder where I've seen that before.
Can't remember.
Anyway, so
insulting the referee as well? I mean, come on.
It's weird and unnecessary. And I have to say, if you're the referee, probably unnecessary to send them off. It's like, you're not going to see this dude ever again. Like, really? You can't just pretend.
I know.
Chelsea lose to Manchester City in the League Cup 2-0 as Riyad Mahrez shines. Jules, I know it's the League Cup, so it shouldn't matter. But it's 3 defeats in the last 4 for Graham Potter.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, we can say that they played a bit better, which is true. I mean, Neil Pulisic has a great chance to score. They have chances in the second half as well. And in terms of what we saw before from Chelsea, especially at the weekend against Arsenal, even with the changes that Potter made, this was a bit better. But you still lost and you didn't score. And yeah, okay, you create some chances, but you could have conceded more goals.
The performance is better.
I thought the performance was better.
I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can't have it both ways, right? We can't say performance.
No, which is true. And we praise them for that. Go away to Newcastle at the weekend now and try to do the same with the win this time, or at least the draw. Our boy Roberto De Zerbi does it again, Gab. Brighton win 3-1 away at Arsenal in the League Cup.
Yeah, I don't know. It was at Arsenal in the sense it was at the Arsenal Stadium. I'm not sure they were playing Arsenal as much as they were playing Eddie Nketiah and a bunch of dudes.
There was a B team from Arsenal and there was changes from Brighton too.
That's fine. You know my love for De Zerbi. I think it's important. This competition is important for Brighton. I think they can do something in it. Especially with now, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea and Spurs all out of the competition. West Ham too.
The London clubs apart from Charlton, I think.
It's apart from Charlton, and you know, Brighton is obviously London by the sea, right? It's not that far away. So, look, well done to them. Builds a momentum, builds a legend of Roberto De Zerbi. If you're Arsenal, you know, I read somewhere, oh, there's not enough depth. No, who cares? This is irrelevant. Doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Move on. Probably a good thing that they're going to attack.
Bayern turned it on against Werder Bremen, winning 6-1 as Serge Gnabry bags a hat-trick. Jules, they're now 4 points clear, and as I see it, the lead is only going to get bigger.
Yeah, I think so, Gab. We said it. Union was a great story until, well, until he lasted, until he ended, and then it has ended now. I can tell you that. I mean, going forward, Bayern was so good against Werder Bremen. Werder are not, I mean, they're okay. I think they were seventh in the table. They're not just this super defensive, solid team at all. So they were always going to leave space. But Bayern took their chances well, even after Mané came off. Even after Choupo missed a penalty, by the way, so he didn't score in that game. But there was always going to be one winner. And to score six, they could have scored more.
I've forgotten about Gnabry and how good he can be. I feel like he had...
so good. And sometimes we forget that he can play so narrow as well and doing really well. Napoli have now built up an 8-point gap in Serie A, the top of Serie A, for following the 2-0 win against Empoli. Gab, Osimhen didn't score, but he did get a penalty. He did win a penalty.
He did get a penalty, which he left to Chucky Lozano to take. Because, of course, you know, this is... I think it speaks to... I don't know, because Osimhen's taken some, Lozano's taken others. I think Zielinski's taken penalties,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Zielinski scoring the second in this game. The penalty was kind of bogus. But on balance, I thought they deserved to win the game. It's an incredible run. I think in the last 14 games, they lost to Liverpool, won every other game. Yeah. They're in a good place. This was way back on Monday night, but still significant. Real Madrid lose 3-2 at Rayo Vallecano. Not a good performance, Jules.
No, it's all got their first defeat in the league this season in a place where it's hard to play. It's a hostile crowd. It's a small stadium. And Rayo played really well, a bit like what we said with the Sasuna before. It's true that they played really well. However, this was just not good enough with the ball in terms of creativity, creating chances. They had no idea, no rhythm, no intensity. And defensively, I mean, come on, considering 3 goals, they haven't kept a clean sheet all season in the league. Courtois are not happy. I think they conceded 13 in 13 or something crazy like that. They have, I think, a lot of work. I don't know if it's work to do or maybe just to be a bit more committed at times, you know, in those kind of games where maybe you're not taking it too seriously or seriously enough?
I think the problem is when you have superstars and you rely on superstars doing superstar things and they don't happen to do it on the day, that's when you run into problems. Valverde tried one of his trademark finishes. Did you see like where it ended up? Like
in the balcony?
Exactly.
And no Karim Benzema, Gab, in that game, of course. Some are suggesting that he's saving himself for the World Cup, which prompted an annoyed response from Carlo Ancelotti.
Of course, because Carlo Ancelotti will always stick up for his players in public, especially if they're superstars. I don't think for a minute Karim Benzema is saving himself for the World Cup. I just think the man is 34 years old. He's been through the wars. He's not always going to be there, which is why in the summer, when Mbappe didn't come, many of us said, well, wait a minute. You know, you've got Asensio expiring contract. You got Hazard perennially unfit. You got Mariano Diaz, who is Mariano Diaz. And I know that's a tautology, but you know what that means.
Jovic had left.
You need another body. You need another live body. This Rodrigo center forward is a nice idea, but come on. You can't rely on this week in, week out. Tottenham Hotspur are out of the League Cup, losing 2-0 to Nottingham Forest. I guess it's some fixture congestion relief for Antonio Conte. But did he really have to play Harry Kane?
I don't think so, but Conte said, oh, that's the only team I could have played. This is the only players I could have played. I think if you really want to, you can always find a way.
Play a bunch of no-names.
But yeah, this can't be your priority anyway. So what's the point of starting almost your strongest team in a game like that and not even winning it? At least if you win and you have a bit of momentum and you go into the last game of the week, before the break at the weekend in a different mind. Now you lost to Liverpool, you lost to Forest. Back-to-back games, you're under pressure again and you're going to play those players again. It's just like, come on, it's not good. Roma drew with Sassuolo 1-1 on Wednesday night, Gab, and Jose Mourinho was not happy, especially with one single player.
Yeah, I have never seen that. Like, we've seen Mourinho at times be critical of players and so on. But, in fact, no, I have seen it before. And it was your buddy Gerard Houllier picking on David Ginola after France failed to qualify for the 94 World Cup. But you know what? That was like nearly 30 years ago. Yeah. This is extremely rare. He came out and he said, oh, everybody on the team was pulling together. Everybody was showing unity except for one guy.
Now, obviously, say who he is, but we all know.
He didn't say who it is. Everybody's assuming he's referring to Rick Karstorp, who was poor in this game. And also who... at the weekend after the Lazio defeat in the derby, when all the Roma players went, this ritual that they have in Italy and in Germany too, yeah, after the game, you go under the curva where the ultras are and you either soak up the applause if you've done well, or you take the abuse.
Apologize, yeah.
Or you apologize, right? People say it's a stupid ritual, whatever. Whatever it is, Karsdorp wasn't there for that. Mourinho actually said, oh, I've already told him to go find himself a new club in January. It's pretty extreme. Again, you have to put your faith in Mourinho that he knows what buttons to push.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, not something you see every day of the week.
No.
France announced a World Cup squad. Jules, woo-hoo! How do we feel about the world champions?
We feel good. Good. I mean, especially attacking-wise, because the front seven, the seven magnificent, as I call them, that Deschamps picked. Benzema, Mbappe, Nkunku, Dembele, Coman, Giroud, and Griezmann are pretty amazing. Defensively, it's very strong, especially with the youngsters, Konate, Upamecano, Saliba, all of that. In midfield, though, the five players who have been picked in midfield, Rabiot, Tchouameni, Fofana, Guendouzi, Veretout, none of them have ever played in the World Cup. Only one has played at the Euros before, Rabiot.
Rabiot, yeah.
And lack of experience.
And that went well at the Euros, yeah, Rabiot.
Exactly. So this is my worry, but hey, trust the process.
Was Rabiot's mom included in the squad?
From the world champions to the World Cup favourites, yeah, Brazil's squad will not include Roberto Firmino, but there is a place for Dani Alves, 39, as a player or as a like assistant coach?
Yeah. Stop being unkind. No, Dani Alves has been playing. He's been playing in Mexico. He's been playing for UNAM, right?
Well, he hasn't played for a while, though.
I haven't watched the games, but I presume he's fit and moving around the pitch and doing what Dani Alves does. Yeah. I don't think he's going to start, but you got 26 players. I have my faith in Chichi, and he knows what he's doing. As for Firmino, I feel for him a little bit because I think obviously last season was difficult for him. This season was better. Mm. I also think with these players, if you're going to bring a center forward, you know multiple center forwards ideally, you need actual center forwards, not somebody who is essentially a false nine, which is how he plays for Liverpool.
I think
so. It makes more sense. Pedro, Richarlison.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, if you're going to go that way.
Yeah.
Borussia Dortmund lose away to Wolfsburg 2-0. Jules, did we get a little too carried away with our excitement over Youssoufa Moukoko?
No, I don't think so. But we've said, not just this season, Gab, but in the last, I don't know, 5 years maybe, that consistency was their problem anyway. And they can be very good like they were at the weekend, and then in midweek, not good at all. And
I thought they'd move past that.
But no, they clearly haven't. We said after the draw against Chelsea that Dortmund might implode between now and when that game is going to be played. And you saw a lot of that
City
against Wolfsburg. It's just Wolfsburg, one, are not very good. But two, they scored early, and that helped them, of course. But then Dortmund didn't have any response to it. Do you know what I mean? It was just not good. It was like a very average performance, average game. And in the end, you lose. And all this kind of credit that you had before, you've lost as well already.
Can we give some love for Niklas Süle, though, as a rampaging right back? My thing for oversized fullbacks, whether it's Niklas Süle or Dan Byrne. That's pretty cool.
I know. Atletico Madrid fall at Mallorca 1-0, Gab, out of Europe entirely. Now joined fourth in La Liga. If you're at Cholo Simeone, why are you thinking? Or if you're Atletico Madrid, why are you thinking right now in terms of your manager? You sack him?
If you're Atletico Madrid, as in like the club, as in like Cerezo and Gil and these guys, I think you're thinking, let's wait for the situation to get really bad. Because we don't have the stones, we don't have the guts to let Diego Simeone go. And he's a proud man, and it's more likely that he will walk away.
Like, come on.
Well, they're fourth in the table, right?
No, I know, but
they're joint fourth in the table. They're better than the teams around them. I think that is how bad it can get. He needs to have an obvious rethink. This thing at the end of the game where it's like, oh, let me chuck on Lamar and Joel Felix.
Anyone and everyone, yeah.
This is not a team. This is a situation where you have a bunch of talented individuals. They had a team ethos before where people had specific roles. It was a ton of chemistry. Now you have a bunch of pieces that don't fit together.
Yeah.
And your solution in games, unless you score early, is to throw these guys on and wait for them to do something. It didn't happen against Mallorca. They need to go better. I think he needs to take to really, really have a long reflection over this break because Atleti fans, I think, deserve better.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, we also saw, I think it was the last game before this, that the Frente Atletico, they staged some kind of protest, some kind of strike where they were late coming in and then they were silent the rest of the game.
Yeah, of course.
It's not just about Simeone, but there are issues there.
Yeah.
It looks like Sadio Mane is out of the World Cup. Jules, this is a body blow for Senegal.
It's massive. I think he might be included. He will be included in the squad. Aliou Cissé will hope for the best that maybe he can be fit for the third game. The problem is Senegal are in Group A, so they play straight away. At least if they were in the last group, for example, exactly. They'll have a bit more time. Now it's tricky. I was told it's 3 to 4 weeks for that injury that he picked up on Tuesday night, which is devastating, really, for him. Let's just hope that he can at least be fit, and if they qualify for the last 16, then he will have a role to play, but it's such a long shot. It's crazy. Inter bounced back from their defeat to Juventus with a 6-1. That's right, 6-1 win against Bologna, and Gab Simone Inzaghi has a way of averting a full-blown crisis. Sorry.
Yeah, and the way is just play Bologna, because I think they scored the last time they had scored six. They were playing Bologna as well.
Really?
They went a goal down in this game to one of the... And go on YouTube and check this out, because it is one of the luckiest own goals that... Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't an own goal, but the Bologna guy shot it. It hits Lico Yannis, takes a weird trajectory into the back of the net. And this is when you wonder, Inter coming off the feet. But look, I said against Juve. They weren't bad against Juve. They played well.
Yeah.
I think Simone Inzaghi, I don't know how he does it, because Inter is a zoo, but he has a way of keeping things calm. He has a way... This feels, dare I say, more like a team mentally than...
Well, good by Dzeko as well. Wow.
I thought he would be the attackers. And two goals as well for my boy, Fede Di Marco. 5 wins in a row now for Leipzig, who beat second place Freiburg 3-1. Jules, the Rose effect is real.
Yeah, it's real, Gab. Great performance, especially in the second half again. Scoring back-to-back, like really back-to-back goals, I think 55, 56, something like that. Simakan and Nkunku. And Nkunku again, what a performance. What a player. He's becoming even better than what he was last season with Marco Rose now. The way they play football, so was like the same. So well done to Rose, well done to the team, because they're on the up. And I think it's a little bit late now to compete with Bayern, I think, unfortunately. But they're doing great things, so...
Yeah, it's weird because, as you know, my feelings on Marco Rose have come and gone. I was a big fan of him when he was at Gladbach. High hopes for him at Dortmund. Hated the way it ended. Yeah. Hated kind of... Just couldn't impose himself at all. And now he takes over and he said, well, you know, if Tedesco couldn't get it done, but... He's doing a lot better with Tedesco's players. So credit to Rose.
Yeah. Milan are held by Cremonese 0-0 as Stefano Pioli makes a lot of changes. Gab, drop points like this could cost them the title, though, and maybe more than that.
They definitely could. They missed Olivier Giroud in this game. He was obviously suspended for taking off his shirt.
Celebration.
Yeah. He felt so bad. Poor guy. What I will say before people get all doom and gloom about them being 8 points behind Napoli is... Milan won the title last season, correct?
Yeah.
Last season at this stage, they had 32 points.
Yeah.
This season, they have 30 points. So I don't know if it's so much a case that suddenly they're
They were
worse.
Not 8 points behind someone who was flying last season.
Yeah, but they can't control that.
No,
I mean,
they
could have controlled. They could have beat Napoli when they played them, and they didn't.
I know.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you assume Napoli are going to slow down, Milan kick it up a notch, then they're back in the race. I don't think it's quite as OTT as some people make it out.
Maybe.
Wild stuff in Sevilla, Jules, as Jorge Sampaoli's crew have Rakitic and Nianzu sent off before halftime and lose 2-1 against Real Sociedad. And we saw the only living Sorloth in captivity emerge to score a tremendous
goal. That chip.
You didn't know he had that in his locker, did you?
I didn't expect him to do that finish at all. At that point, I thought he was going to smash it in. And instead, it was just nice and, you know, swift and everything. I mean, we said we were worried about Sevilla before, and Sampaoli. I mean, too many red cards to start with. Too many, you know, they didn't lose the derby, but too many red cards. It looks like there's frustration within that camp, within the way the players play, the fouls that they make. And it's just not looking good. And this was a big test because Real Sociedad are a good team, of course.
Nianzu is a young player, and... Maybe his head got to him and whatever. And I thought that red card was a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit,
anyway.
Maybe.
But if you're Rakitic, how do you get yourself sent off in a game like this?
So early as well.
What is your excuse?
There's no excuse. There's no excuse.
I thought he really let himself down there.
Yeah. Atalanta make a bunch of changes and lose at Lecce 2-1, dropping down to fifth now. But Gab, I want to ask you about their highly rated central defender, Caleb Okoli.
So the interesting thing is, we are turning into France and Italy. And look, this is a natural thing with immigration patterns and stuff like that. Caleb Akali is of Nigerian descent. He was born in Italy. He was raised in Italy. He's Italian. He's played at youth level right up to the under-21s for Italy. He's a very good central defender. Mm-hmm. He has not yet been capped by Roberto Mancini. Obviously won't be capped at the World Cup. Oh. I think you know why.
It's a shame.
So Nigeria gets on the phone. This is what happens. It's funny because people made a parallel between this and Christian Volpato, who plays for Roma, whose parents are Australian, or who's also Australian. His parents are of Italian descent, so he has an Italian passport. And he, too, is like, you know, he got a call from Australia, do you want to go to the World Cup and so on, which annoyed Mourinho, apparently. I find it interesting about the world we're in, that here we have the son of Italian immigrants to Australia, who's in a sort of has to decide between nations, and here we have another guy who is who's deciding between nations, who is a son of Nigerian.
Welcome to my world. Immigrants. You know, this is
welcome to France. Right?
I know the dilemma is there.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Much of the horror of producer Freddie, Union Berlin dropped points again, held 2-2 by Augsburg. Jules, do you expect them to continue sinking like a stone?
I don't want them to. I love the story. It's a great story. We've explained before that it would not last because the squad, there's no depth, because of the way they play, because of all of that. They can't, you know, I don't think they could challenge for the title through the whole season. But I don't want them to fall. I want them to keep being able to manage the Europa League and the league and finish top six again, like they did last year, would be perfect.
Yeah, it's called regression to the mean. People say, oh, expected goals don't
matter. They overachieved them tremendously.
And now this is what you
get. Gab, we have a final decision in the Baron Castillo case. Remember, the Court of Arbitration for Sport Cars said that Ecuador will get to play in the World Cup, but they will have a 3-point penalty in World Cup qualifying, obviously, you know, for the next one. Does that seem fair to you?
Yeah, so no, this, so, okay. From a legal standpoint, no, it's grossly unfair for the simple reason that this guy is not Ecuadorian. this guy is from a different country. Yeah. This guy played with forged papers and fake papers for a number of years. So from that perspective, it's not fair. From another perspective, I think Cass did right, did well to consider two things. One is the World Cup is 10 days away. You can't kick Ecuador out and, you know, rejigger everything. Hey, Chile, come on in. It makes no sense, right? From the other perspective, Byron Castillo, I think it was 4 years ago, gave testimony in the Ecuadorian inquiry where he said, no, yeah, as far as I know, I was born in Colombia, and as far as I know, like, these papers are fake, and I'm actually Colombian, whatever.
This is not new.
He admitted it. I think the question is, how was this allowed to continue happening, and they only found out now? And ultimately, Cass said, well, in the end, whichever way you got it, you have an Ecuadorian passport. And this is important, too, because he's lived in Ecuador since he was very, very little. So even if he had been born abroad, had he gone through a different system, he could have been naturalized as Ecuadorian and would have been naturalized just by residency. So I think in the end, they got to the right outcome. Manchester United have been fined £82,000 for failing to control their players in successive games against Tottenham and Chelsea. Does this make sense to you, Jules, or is this punishment just totally insignificant?
Completely insignificant. I've said it to you before. I think I ranted about it earlier this season. I don't understand them. This is only in England, really. I don't get it, because guess what? They will do it again. The players don't think, oh, I can't go to the referee, I can't go into argy-bargy with the opposition because the club is going to get fined. This is completely pointless. And you get some money in.
If you want to cut this out, if you don't like it, rather than punishing
the points?
Manchester United 0.0001% of their annual revenue, then what you do is, since you have cameras ever and video evidence, right? you can either fine the players or, better yet, suspend the players.
Exactly.
You know, hey, you, Victor Lindelof, why did you walk aggressively?
Too aggressive, exactly.
Give him a hard time, right?
Exactly.
If you wanted to snap this otherwise, but finding a club, just
this
nothing. This
makes no sense whatsoever. A22, the company behind the Super League, had a meeting with UEFA in Lyon. Gab, how did that go?
I think they were kind of ambushed. So, essentially, you know, these are the guys who are behind the Super League. Now they're saying we just want dialogue, an open system. System's all messed up, blah, blah, blah. You can go to their website. They explain to you the Super League reasons. UEFA said, hey, yeah, why don't you come over to Neon? Come over to our house. Let's have some dialogue. And this poor man, this German guy, who's now blanking on his name now.
I can't remember his name
either. He walks in, and sort of in a line, you have not just the guys from UEFA, but you have the European Clubs Association.
Yeah, of course.
You have FIFPro. You have representatives from the European Professional Leagues. You have all these people lined up, and all of a sudden, it's like he's like, whoa. You know, look, and then they all release statements, and at the end of it, you know, they're like, productive talks, but
yeah, but no,
this ain't happening. But no, you go through the proper channels, Sporting Merit, blah blah blah. I don't look they. Before, they said, like, let's do everything in secret and let's essentially break away and form our own competition and we'll present it as a fait accompli. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
All right, there you go. And force UEFA to negotiate on our terms, right? And so they were all mean and secretive and people didn't like that.
Exactly.
This time around, they're like, hey, look, we're really nice guys. Yeah, let's have a conversation. And this is what they get. The gloves are off.
You can't win anyway.
Southampton have appointed Nathan Jones to replace the sacked Ralph Hasenhüttl. Jules, who is he and is he a good choice?
He's an interesting choice to start with. He was the Luton manager.
No, I know you don't.
But where he did a good job in the sense that I like the fact that Southampton thought a little bit outside of the box and went to get a young, upcoming manager who's doing well in the Championship instead of maybe going to, I don't know, I'm saying
he got them promoted,
to Sundage, for example.
He got them promoted, no? From League One?
League One, he got them promoted, and then they were very close. I mean, close. They were in the playoff to come up in the Premier League as well. So really good track record from him. At a different level, let's be honest here. This is a different challenge in the Premier League to keep that team up, but with all the youngsters, and I think he works well with youngsters. But yeah, I prefer that than going to get Sean Dyche or, I don't know, all those dinosaurs. I'm much happier there. Exactly. So good luck to him. Good luck to Southampton. But I like the appointment.
Now, as I understand it, and again, I'm very open about this. I do not watch the Football League, but I do talk to people who do watch it. His type of football, maybe not as uber pressing running as Ralph Hasenhüttl, but still definitely possession oriented, technical players, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it should fit well with the squad. It's just a young squad, and he's obviously a young manager in every sense of the word. Former FIFA president Sepp Blatter says that holding the World Cup in Qatar was a mistake. Thank you for that one. Gav, should anybody care what he says today, like 12 years after?
No, and you know what? Captain Hindsight, seriously, General Hindsight and Captain Obvious, all rolled into one, into the Swiss, you know, bundle of love. Look, from what we know of the 2010 vote, this is what we know, what is pretty much established fact, right? Sepp Blatter did not want the 2022 World Cup to go to Qatar. He was one of 24 people voting, and he would have had the tie-breaking vote. He wanted it to go to the United States. At least this is what he told everybody.
Yeah.
His vote wasn't even needed to send it to Qatar, as it turns out, right? So I'll take him on his word when he says, like, yeah, I voted for the U.S. Fine. The problem is, of the 24 people who were allowed to vote, two of those 24 people were not allowed to vote because they were found under investigation for corruption, asking money in exchange for votes before it even started, which puts you on a good...
Before that, yeah.
Of the other 22 people, 14 of them have either been banned or indicted, okay? Including Blatter, of course, banned, right? And have been generally found guilty, the ones where it's gone through. The one who hasn't, of course, is Grondona, because he died before it could happen.
Otherwise, it would have been.
So what are you saying here? You're saying that vote was corrupt? Okay, fine. you had an investigation, yeah. right? And what happened? It took you years to get off your backside to go and have this actual investigation into the World Cup. Well, by the way, it didn't just concern Qatar. It concerned Russia 2018 as well. Yeah, once you got off your backside, you hired this guy named Michael Garcia, former FBI investigator and stuff like that, which, by the way, Garcia didn't have any subpoena powers, so he couldn't make anybody talk to him. So a bunch of people never even talked to him.
Yeah.
Secondly, because I don't know how many people know the story, so I think we need to go through this. Secondly, Michael Garcia, not allowed to go visit Russia. And the reason he's not allowed to visit Russia is that in his previous life as a prosecutor, he prosecuted some Russian gangsters in the U.S., so there was an issue where he's not allowed to physically travel to Russia and do any kind of investigation, which begs the question, why you hire this dude? Whatever. But anyway, he had a number two, a guy named Cornell Borderly, who went and did that for him. Thirdly, these guys put together the report, and then when the report needs to be punished, what happens? FIFA say, oh, well, we can't publish the report because there's legal implications. So don't worry. We'll get this other guy, Eckert, I think is his name, the German guy, might sound Swiss or German or whatever. Some other dude says, don't worry. I will read the report for you and I'll issue a 42-page summary because there's valid legal reasons. Again, lawyers, right? So they sit on this. So basically, all this time goes by when you could have done something about it.
Yeah.
You could have done something about it. And then what happens? Well, Blatter goes, Infantino takes over, they're sitting on this report, which at that point nobody has read. The German magazine Bild, or German newspaper Bild, gets their hands on a copy of the report.
Of course.
Which, by the way, I think everybody knows who passed them the report. Yeah. And then as soon as Bild say, yeah, we're going to publish it on Wednesday, FIFA's like, all right, screw this. Here's the report. It's on PDF. It's on the internet. You can look for it. And I'll tell you what, Jules, and this is a sign of the times of what World Cup bidding was like then. The only people who come out, okay, of all the bidding nations in the World Cup, the only ones who I think come out of it with no shame are Holland and Belgium, and to a lesser degree, the Japan-Korea bid.
Yeah.
The other ones, to different degrees, you've got stories of the 10-year-old daughter of a FIFA executive committee member having $2 million transferred to her amount. What kind of 10-year-old earns $2 million for anything? And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff like this. So, you know, frankly, Blatter, you don't like it? It was corrupt? Whatever? Fine. But what did you do when you had the chance?
Yeah, nothing.
It looks like you were right, Jules, and Hongmin Son will go to the World Cup. This is pretty huge for Korea, yeah?
Yeah, it's big, it's good. I mean, he had surgery, he would have to wear a mask, of course, and again, you don't know.
He can borrow one from Osimhen.
Yeah, exactly, although maybe they don't, maybe it goes with the shape Osimhen's, of your face, Osimhen's or maybe face the size, yeah. Slippery. But it's good, you won the best players at the World Cup. I hope that he recovers both psychologically and physically as well as he can from that head clash with Chancel Mbemba in the Marseille game, and that he can be at his best or near his best for South Korea.
Am I being stupid? Please tell me if I'm being stupid on this, right? But obviously it was a clash of heads. So I'm assuming in terms of muscles and fitness and ability to run and everything, he's going to be 100%. You know, other than the fact he took a couple of days off.
Yeah.
It's just a question
for a bit, but
whether his head is.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's more psychologically than anything else. According to reports, Romelu Lukaku will be included in the Belgium squad if they're convinced that he can be back, at least for the third group game in the group stage, Gab. What do you make of this?
I think it's logical. I mean, to be honest, you know my thoughts on the 26-man roster. It's there. Use it.
Yeah.
Take Romelu. In fact, even if he's only fit for the final and he wants to come, he's a really popular guy in the dressing room. We spent some time with Vincent Kompany. Yeah. Clearly, Vincent Kompany is very, very fond of Lukaku.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take him along. What's he going to do? If he's fit, he plays. I mean, to me, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah,
I think this is what they should do, even if it's later in the tournament. You know, putting these things, the third group game or whatever. I mean, unless you're so superstitious. But I would hope that we've kind of moved past that, no?
Definitely.
Reports in Germany say Manchester United have targeted... Are you ready for this? Now, this is in case Cristiano Ronaldo moves in January.
Yeah.
They have the perfect replacement. It's not Marco Arnautovic. It's Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting.
Oh, I would love that, to be fair.
Would he love that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
No, I think he'd...
If you're Bayern, you would not either. This is never going to happen. But... Wow, I don't even know what to say. I mean, well done to him.
You know why this story comes out?
Yeah.
It's because his contract extension.
At the end of the season, exactly. He will get a new deal at Bayern Munich, regardless of if they go and buy a big-name striker in the summer, like a Harry Kane or whatever. And he deserves, I think he's earned the right to get that extension now anyway, by the way, because he's been so good for them. But yeah, I love that. So it's always United that you put, the name in.
But it's also like, he's been phenomenal, right? He didn't score this week, but he scored, like, 7 straight games and whatever. I'm assuming, I don't know the guy personally, but when you weigh up the pros and cons, you're like, okay, let's see. Germany, where I think he partially grew up in Germany, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
he spent a long time there. Or Manchester. Champions League with Bayern, you know, sit on the bench probably when everybody's fit, or sit in the bench with Manchester United in the Europa League. Assuming that even happens, of course, because they might lose to Barcelona and they could go out really quickly. Plus, most of all, I'm sorry, but in England, you're seen as a bit of a, not a laughing stock, but you're seen as somebody who is a Stoke City level. So it's not like you show up.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, like Joe, ex-pro pundit on television, isn't going to be like, oh, look, that's Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting from Bayern. They're going to say, oh, look, that's Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting from Stoke.
Yeah.
So I see no reason why he would want to do this. And frankly, I see no reason why United would do this. If you have to replace Cristiano Ronaldo, get somebody younger, right?
The Big Six lost a vote to stop reform of football finances in England. Gab, what do you make of it?
Yeah, so they're calling this the New Deal for football. And basically what the vote was about was giving the Premier League, in discussions with the EFL and the FA, a mandate to try to negotiate a new deal. Now, the six Premier League, the big six, so Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester City, and Manchester United, they all voted against it. It had to be a two-thirds majority to block it, so they didn't get that. The reason that they're against it is it contains certain, or they fear it could contain certain provisions, such as, for example, the funds that the Premier League gives to the Football League. You know, right now they're based on league placement, but there is some suggestion that maybe it should be based on performance across the board, including the Champions League and Europe, which means that these guys would then have to pay more money. At some point, they need to pass this because the Premier League clubs desperately want certain reforms. And namely, they want to make it easier to sign foreign players. You know, despite post-Brexit, the rules have tightened up. They want to no more FA Cup replays, but just go straight to penalties, like they do
like in the League Cup.
These things are important to them. Oh, and for the League Cup, sorry, you know how much I love the League Cup, give teams the options not to participate or to participate with an under 21 side.
Yeah.
So these are their big asks, and they control the money. And essentially, if they give enough money to the Football League and the FA will sell themselves to the Premier League like they always do. But it is interesting. There's a very clear, defined split here between the big six. And it's also interesting, I think, the position Newcastle, who you could argue, you know, could soon be part of them, at least in terms of economic might, they said, no. We'll go the other way. We'll side with the little guys. Greg Berhalter has announced his U.S. squad for the World Cup, and there's no Ricardo Pepi, I believe, still the most expensive MLS sale in history.
Yeah.
Jules?
Yeah, I think this is a surprise, of course, like Zach Steffen to a certain extent, maybe Jordan Pefok too. Some names that maybe you would have expected to be there in a 26-man squad. Berhalter made his choices. I think, you know, he has his reasons, I'm sure. For Pepi, I think he's been scoring. He's been doing well in the Eredivisie. And you would also think that you're playing this World Cup with 2026 in the back of your mind. And this is going to be a great experience for anyone that you can bring to Qatar, especially younger players. And not to see Ricardo Pepi in there is, for me, a bit disappointing.
I am a bit surprised, too, because I know people say I don't want to manage a 26-man squad. It's not just him. But you can also call these people and then cut them and then send them home when you get to Qatar. It's not, you know, if you handle it the right way, if you say, hey, Ricardo, I was going to cut you, but, you know, maybe something can still happen. Maybe we're going to have something. Will you come with me?
And show me, or
whatever. Like there is a way to do it in a nice way. He seems like a nice guy. Pepi, I don't have no idea if he's reasonable or whatever. He's not going to go and play the diva, I would imagine. So I am a little surprised.
Wales also announced their World Cup squad, Gab, and coach Rob Page had to go out his way to tell everyone that Gareth Bale won't be given time off to play golf during the tournament.
This is This is so stupid. I feel for Rob Page. And look, I've been critical of Gareth Bale. I feel for Gareth Bale now,
yeah,
too.
I mean, whoever
asked this question.
I know, come on.
Now, he did say, Rob Page did say, oh, sometimes, you know, there was an afternoon off and
of
the
course,
lads would say, like, oh, can you squeeze nine holes in? But, I mean, seriously?
Yeah.
These are the questions that you ask.
The first World Cup since 58 and you have one World question Cup? And you say that?
Man, let me screw up. Anyway, Jules, that brings us to an end. We've got the final league meeting until the next time after this league weekend of football, we will have a new world champion.
I know.
Incredible stuff.
I know.
And of course, big games this weekend as well. So that means we've got to come back on Monday and do it all over again.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/GabJules now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/GabJules.